Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Miss Nigan Isquiak. We are the Book Women, and my name is Kayla, one of your lovely matey auntie hosts. And I am joined today by
Tanya, another lovely matey auntie host. And we also have
Sheila, the loveliest of them all. I always do that, and I'm always like, oh, you sound so stupid, but.
No, you gotta. We're like the three bears. Lovely, lovely, or loveliest.
Yeah, that's me.
Or I thought you were gonna say the stepsisters that are just like
we got the ugly, uglier, ugliest.
Oh.
You know, for Christmas this year, I bought they were like ugly sweater Christmas awards, and they had little ribbons, and that's what they said on them, and I gave them to my family members because I'm an asshole.
You know what though, because we're aunties, I think it's auntie deadly, deadlier, and deadliest.
Yes.
Yeah, I like that.
Okay, I'm the deadliest, the loveliest, and the deadliest. Nice.
There you go.
Yes. Anyway.
Deadliest or sassiest.
Here we are.
Yeah, that.
All right. What did we read this month?
Dun, 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 dun. Dun, dun, we dun, dun, read Empire of the Wild by Shri Demeline.
Yeah, you know, I'm looking up a lot of about this book online, and there's two different covers that you could see, right? And I like the cover that I have the best.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I was going to say, yeah, do we all have the same one cover?
Like, yeah, I have the one with the giant wolf on it and this tiny woman wearing a red jacket.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, just this cover says quite a bit, hey? Yeah. The other one, I think it's just woods or something, but
it's woods with like a chair in the woods, like a chair sitting in the woods from what I remember from seeing it.
Oh, that's creepy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The woods are super creepy. You know, there's a lot of fairy tales and stuff like that and stories that involve the woods, scary stories. But if you have ever been on, well, Kayla, you would know this a lot, like living on a farm, being close and no one around. The woods are a scary place at night.
They are. It's like, it's dark, but it's also like the woods kind of, when it is really dark, they feel like it closes in on you, especially because the trees are so high. Whereas like open grassland, like you can see forever. But when you're in the woods, especially like really dense woods, like we have out in Vancouver in the coastal rainforest, it can be really dense where you can't like see through them. It feels like it closes in on you when it's dark. It's creepy. I know there's been a few times when myself and like Eric have been walking back from the beach, and we'll cut through Stanley Park because it's like faster to get back to our apartment. And it is, even though I'm like, oh, it's Stanley Park, like it's in the middle of Vancouver. It can be creepy. And like, I'm always worried about a coyote biting my leg or something, or Eric tells me I have to stop screaming because usually it's just like a person. And then they're like, oh my God, why is this lady screaming at me as I'm coming around the bend? Like, just getting really jumpy. Like, you know, when you get jumpy, you're just like gasping, going around every corner. Eric's like, stop. He's like, what are you afraid of? And truthfully, it's like rabid raccoons as well. Like a gang of raccoons is going to chase me through Stanley Park. That's what I'm worried about.
I miss seeing the raccoons from when I lived in BC. They're just everywhere, running down the street.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we were sitting on a patio the other day and the mice were like running under our feet. That was a new one, but they were just like, I mean, bougie ratatouille mice that were super, you know, into running around on the patio. Like
starting up the barbecue, making some hamburgers.
Exactly.
I get you about the woods, though.
Or, well, tell us offline.
Oh, it was at a restaurant in Gastown.
Mm.
Yeah. So near the water, it's pretty standard to see mice pretty much everywhere. Like even our apartment, the mice like run down the sidewalk. I've kicked one before. I screamed very loud when it happened. I like kicked one all the way down the block. I was like, did not expect it. Well, it just ran out like across the sidewalk as I was walking, and I just poof, and it just took off. Like, and I screamed. So yeah.
And so what creature is in the woods in this book? Are we afraid of mice or?
No, we are afraid of the Rougarou.
The Rougarou. Whenever I hear the, because we were talking about this a little bit before, but I didn't learn about the Rougarou until my university years. And whenever I hear the word Rougarou, I think of the French word loup-garou, which means werewolf. It's a werewolf.
Yep.
Which essentially is what the Rougarou kind of is.
Is it just like maybe a makeshift, like
version
putting
of it,
together? Yeah. Of Le Rougarou.
Yeah. Well, at least the French makeshift for sure. Reading through this book, yeah, the makeshift words are, I could distinguish what they were just based on my French knowledge. But there's a lot of makeshift words like that, like l'histoire. It's like history, l'histoire. It's interesting. So before we get too deep into it, let's list off the summary here. So this book essentially is about a woman. She's the main character. Her name is Joan. And one hungover morning in a Walmart parking lot in a little town near Georgian Bay, Joan is drawn to a revival tent where the local Métis have been flocking to hear a charismatic preacher. When she gets there, the service is over, but as she leaves, she hears an unmistakable voice, her husband, Victor, who has been missing for over a year. But the man insists he's not Victor. He's the Reverend Eugene Wolf. Hint, hint, Wolf. Get it? On a mission to bring people to Jesus. And as she confronts them, there's no flicker of recognition in his eyes. So essentially, this is the story about how she's trying to go and find her husband who went missing after an argument that they have. And in her adventure, I would say, she comes up and comes up against the Rougarou. And there's many Rougarous in this story.
Mm-hmm. So maybe we should start by just elaborating a little bit on what a Rougarou is. And yeah, it is interesting that like neither of us, it's a Métis thing, but none of us grew up with these stories. So it's kind of more like, I don't know what I want to say about that, but it is interesting. But we all kind of have like a word for an evil or like a sinister presence in communities, whether it be like Rougarou or a Wendigo or like just the regular devil. Regular devil.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what we called it in our community. Like growing up, they would say like avec le diable, which is like with the devil. Mm. Or we would talk about evil spirits like latching themselves onto you. So the way that I kind of understood it, and like within my family's knowledge, we think that there's some people in our family who have the gift to see. So some people in my family can actually see these creatures, which is very cool, but also very creepy because they look like monsters, little monsters. Sometimes they're like little spiky things crawling around on the floor, but it's a monster or an evil spirit that's latched themselves onto you for one way or another. So it could be because someone's saying bad things about you and they latch onto you because of that, because that person who is saying bad things wants harm to get at you. So then these evil things kind of latch themselves onto you and suck you dry, or even transform you into that monster, right? So it's interesting. It's interesting and terrifying. So I've had lots of evil monsters latch themselves onto me. And we've all had those people that we met that we consider to be like demonic or devil-like, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In a good way and in a bad way.
Yeah.
Those people that, yes.
There's good and evil demons for sure.
Yeah.
I know that in modern Canadian society, there's a group of people who calls them narcissists or narcissism, you know, like people who have that personality disorder that they just don't think of anyone and they're just toxic.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So there's all different ways to call and describe this monster.
Well, and I think too, like this just shows, because I just was looking up where Sheree is from, and she's from Ontario around the Georgian Bay. And I know earlier we were just kind of talking about how, like, you know, Métis communities, like there's a lot, you know, there's a lot of diversity between our communities, depending on where you're from, right? And like the stories will change. Also, the landscape informs our stories and what's around, and, you know, stories on the prairies of like, are a little bit different because, you know, it's a lot of grassland, not a lot of like densely wooded forest unless you go really north, or there are some areas, but, you know, grassland creatures are more scary. The ones that you can see in the distance, you know, they're watching you and they're just like lurking in the grass and then come out. They come from the sky, things like that. Yeah, because we didn't have like a, we had a werewolfy type story, but it was just like a werewolf, like an actual wolf, like a shapeshifter type person, but not the Ruger, just called the werewolf, like a werewolf, or people that can shapeshift into other animals as well. So not just wolves, but like deer, or like, I know out here on the coast, there's a lot of stories about people that can shapeshift into bears and things. So, and a lot of time it's like not to cause malicious intent though, but they are shapeshifters.
I would love to be a bear shapeshifter. That would be so cool. Or a deer shapeshifter.
Yeah, it'd be cool to be a shapeshifter in general.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm in love with Deer Woman. I want to get a Deer Woman tattoo. I don't know if I've ever told you that, on my thigh. So for those of you who don't know who Deer Woman is, it's another, I guess I'll call it like a creature or a character in Indigenous storytelling. Not all communities have a Deer Woman. I think it's more Southern, like in the States. But Deer Woman is basically this badass female character that if men are treating women badly, she hunts them down and stomps on their genitals.
Yes.
Which is like, yeah, she's badass. She's like a representative for like revenge for the missing and murdered Indigenous women, girls, and Two-Spirit folks.
Yes, I support this tattoo.
Thank you. Thank you.
Are you going to get it like the Deer Woman, like the drawing of Deer Woman, or like your own interpretation?
I want to get my own interpretation of it. I want it to look more cutesy because I think like it'll match my other tattoos that way.
Yeah.
I don't want a spooky thing. So, well, I want it to be spooky, but in a spooky cutesy kind of way.
Yeah.
Just to match my own personality.
I was going to say to like you, very spooky cutesy.
Yeah, that makes sense, Tanya.
Yeah. As I'm sitting here with my like skeleton Mickey shirt.
I got skeletons on today too.
I just covered in Star Wars.
Nice. Nice. Equally as important and awesome.
Yeah. That's the evil empire that we grew up knowing about. Anyway.
Other than the Canadian government?
Rather than those fucking guys.
There's a lot of that in this book.
Yes.
A lot. Like, there's a lot of, like, there's the main storyline, but there's a lot of underlining, like, storylines here that are going on.
Yes.
Especially, yeah. Like, there's the church, the relationship with Indigenous folks and the church, that's there. Pipelines, that's also there. Land protection and selling of land, that's also mm-hmm. there.
There's even like the kind of the struggle between like tradition and like modernization that comes up a lot in this book. Yeah, and how that affects Indigenous communities.
Where should we start unpacking?
Okay, yes. Other than I would say like, this was a great, you know, it's summer, y'all. If you didn't have time to read it for our listeners, this is a great beach read because it's not super like, I read it while laying on the beach and it was great because it wasn't too, you know, it had emotional parts, but it wasn't too overly emotional. It was like suspenseful. It kept me reading without being like, okay, I can't like read this right now. I need to put it down. Like I just like laid there on my beach blanket, got a horrible burn on my ass and kept reading. Like
this book is worth taking a sunburn for.
Yeah, it is. And it sucks you in. It's one of those books where you just like, you get really into the storyline. You got like really into the characters and like what's happening. And it's suspenseful in like a good way where you're just like, okay, I got to read one more chapter and then we'll do the other thing. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Agreed. I was like, oh, I have to read this because we're going to talk about it on Saturday. But then it was like a very enjoyable read and like, mm-hmm. easier for my brain to process right now, which is nice. And like, you know, a lot of people are like gravitating towards like mysteries and like other things, but it wasn't a mystery. It was like deeper than a mystery. It was like suspense, thriller, culture.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I really, really enjoyed it.
It was so refreshing, right? Because like there's a lot of novels out there written by Métis authors, but they tend to be like biographies or autobiographies or like, this is my story and I'm writing this story for the purpose of my own healing. But this, it was a Métis like fiction book, which is something I have never read before.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought it was awesome. And I've read a few book reviews online and they keep saying they talk about it and they label it as magical realism. But I wouldn't even say that, like, because when you say and you put magical in front of it, like it kind of takes away the traditional storytelling about it. You know, I think the Rougarous are real. Absolutely.
Yeah. Now that I know about them, yeah, they're real. And like,
absolutely. I've met a few Rougarous in my life. I've dated a few of them, you know?
Girl, I hear you. Yep.
But I feel like also potentially at those troubling times in our lives, we have probably been them too.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's the thing about Rougarou. It latches itself onto you. Or if you meet someone, it just... It takes you over as well.
I'm perfect, so I don't think I've experienced that.
Auntie Deadliest is perfect. She's not a Ruger.
Like, I can't relate to that. That doesn't sound like me. Maybe I'm in full Rougarou denial. I don't know.
right now
I'm like, what? It just became Gemini season. Like, I don't see anything bad happening to me. This is my time to shine. Like, I don't know what you're talking about. Yeah, anyway,
my Rougarou moments tend to happen when I am not managing myself properly.
Oh, when you say it like that, oh, holy shit. Yeah, I'm such a Rougarou.
You know, so like if I don't get sleep or if I'm hangry or if I'm like, if I'm triggered about something or stressed out or I've had too much on my plate, that's when the Rougarou comes out. And fuck, man, sometimes I can bite.
Okay, well, when you put it like that, yeah, I have been a Rougarou. Yeah. I was like, I don't think I've ever done anything.
We've all got a little Rougarou.
Yeah. I don't think I've ever done anything wrong. Like,
We all got a little Rougarou in us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
Or have had a little Rougarou in us.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's about, you got to learn how to feed your Rougarou.
Ayla.
Oh my God. I just clued into that. Yes.
A little one. Yeah.
Inside of me.
Love it.
Well, that's a great segue. There's a whole lot of sex in this book. I was not expecting that because I'm so used, because Cherie Desmoulins, she also wrote The Marrow Thieves, which is a young adult fiction. So I was picking this up thinking that I would be reading a young adult novel, but holy shit, it is not. There's lots of swearing, lots of fucking. Even the old lady gets some action.
Yeah, of course she does. She sounds like a badass bitch. I felt like I was like looking into a mirror when like Ajin, like that character, I was like, oh yeah, the most relatable one, like this salty old woman who's like, if you don't bring two pills, don't stay over. I'm like, yeah.
Oh yeah. I was reading that. Is there somewhere in the book too where it talks about how she doesn't really have any teeth, so she's kind of gummy, which is perfect.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah.
Coming out of her life. Uh-huh. Yeah, I love, she was my favorite character, I would say. She was awesome.
Yeah.
I want to be that horny old lady.
I am that horny old lady.
I was about to say I might already be there in my life.
Oh, oh yeah.
God.
Weren't you just talking about like sex supports, the one Tanya for like positions for like people with disabilities so that it doesn't hurt? I think we might be those old ladies. Was. Like
I accept it and honor it. I actually, so this is really kind of side note, but I actually had to buy a specialized bookshelf that hides the covers of my books because I have a really, like, I don't want to say big, but I have a lot of graphic novels with sexual content in it. I don't really want my kids are not at that age yet. So I have to kind of hide them in a way that they won't pick it up off the shelf and be like, well, what's this? And see all these weird, like crazy things going on.
I think I would love that just because like looking at other people's like bookshelves is like highly intimate and I just don't want people in my business, even though I don't have like particularly sexy things, I guess. Well, I do, but I don't know. It's just like, that's like my brain, like physically represent. Yeah. Like I don't want people looking at my bookshelves. Yeah. And like I have just some weird stuff. Like, it's too intimate.
Yeah, I think, and especially when you have those weird, like, those weird books on your shelf that you're like, "This is my favorite book," but I don't want anyone to know that because it's so dumb that like, and you've read it so many times over from like cover to cover, but you're like, "I don't want anyone to know."
Yeah.
Mine is 100 Ways to Die and Other Stupid Shit. Like, literally, I have read this book and it's like 100 ways to die. Like, really stupid ways that people have died. And I love reading that book. Like, I just like pick it up and I'm like, yeah.
All right, let's get back to the book. I kind of want to talk about Joan as a character because I am a little in awe of her because she has been gaslit for this like almost entire book. You're crazy. But she just keeps moving forward. And I think the only one who supported her was Ajin. Mm-hmm. And she's like, no, if you know this in your heart, that guy, that's your husband. Go get him. Go save him.
Yeah.
She is resilient.
Yeah.
Like that. Mm-hmm. I appreciated that because, you know, there's probably a lot of women out there that can see themselves in a character like this, which I appreciated.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah. She was like a super strong character. And like, I mean, I had times that I was reading and I'm like, well, maybe she is like crazy. But then like, as she started to develop more, I was like, no, you go get your man, but also fuck him. So like, you know,
yeah.
do we really need him and want him? Like, should we think about this one? Like,
yeah,
you don't like Victor, hey?
No.
Yeah, I mean, the argument that they had, but it tends to be like in desperation when those moments happen, mm-hmm. right? So I wonder what was going on with him that he was stressed out about money.
Yeah. So yeah. In the book, like the original fight that like gets him to leave is like they're fighting over selling her land that she got from her dad, and like he's like, oh look, we could sell our land, and she's like, that's never been an option, and I can't,
that's
believe,
not our land,
yeah, I can't believe
nothing a part of it,
yeah, so and then he goes off and like gets Rugarood and like becomes a reverend, and it's like, oh, you're dumb.
I love that he just went off and got himself Rougarooed, like,
and then turned into a reverend.
And then turned into a reverend.
Yeah.
I think that there is something really, really funny about the fact that he turned in, like, he just turned into God after he turned into a Rougarou.
Yeah. Like,
isn't that just the truth?
How dumb and susceptible are you, stupid guy? But anyway.
I bet that's why people join cults, you know? Like, yeah, they get Rougarooed and just follow the pack leader, whoever that is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, and I think there's just this thing in our, like, human nature that we're easily susceptible. Yes, that word. That we're easily that word to things, and, like, you know, we get drawn in by stuff sometimes and become, like, obsessive about it, and it's just within, like, our own nature. And I feel like there's different things that we do it, but I, you know, that need and the greed that we have as people and the anxiety that we hold can turn us into these little monsters that we're just, like, these greedy little anxiety demons that are just, like, stressed out and, like, overworked and just, like, slaves to capitalism.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Life. It's life. Like, life is turning us into Rougarous.
Well, and, like, there's that character, the woman character in the church group. Oh, shoot.
Oh, what's her name? Claudine? Or it starts with a C.
I think you're right. Claudia?
Damn it. Anyway, that she was, like, way into drugs. Mm-hmm. Or Charisse, isn't it? No. Anyway, damn it. Anyway, and she was, like, way into drugs, and then suddenly, like, way into church, and, like, just an extreme of things. And it's like, yeah, that's, like, you're searching for something really hard, and, like, you're just not finding it.
Yeah. And you know how many people that I know that are like that? That were, like, pretty questionable at times in their life, and now they're like, I go to church and I'm godly. It's like, you're still a horrible person. Like, just because you go to church does not make you a better person. If anything, you should be listening with your ears cleaned out and a little bit more open. So
get that wax out of there.
Cecile is her name.
Oh,
Cecile.
I knew it started with a C, but I was way off.
Yeah, she's, like, got her own demons following her for sure in the book. Like, watch yourself, you're gonna get Rougarooed, you dumb bitch.
You dumb bitch. I feel like she is already, you know.
Yeah, I know.
Oh my god. You know, if we make merch, I feel like that has to go on something. Don't get Rougarooed, you dumb bitch. Like, maybe we can make a service where people can just be like, they can pay us $10 to call their friends and get Rougarooed, you dumb bitch, and just leave it on their answering machine or something.
Answering machine.
Like, something where we
can
call
and be like, people go to their offices. Yeah,
we can like show up at their work or like over Zoom, and they're like, your friends are very worried about you. Don't get Rougarooed, you dumb bitch. Like, your friends are concerned. Oh my god. I feel like this needs to go on a journal or something.
Yeah, like
a poster.
An anti-service. Like, don't get Rougarooed, you dumb bitch. Anyway. Oh my god. So I really want to talk about how the church is so connected with, like, getting, like, the mines and the pipeline going as like a means of getting public support on, and, like, this traveling Christian revival thing, like, goes to where there's opposition for, like, land destroying projects, and gets people and politicians to sign up and sing the praises of, like, God and jobs, and people get sucked in.
And you kind of see that from like the beginning of the book, like the tension between like the mines and oil and gas and stuff, and like other more community focused things, like when Junior is going to apply at the mines for the job. And then Mayor was like, why don't you get a job at the Friendship Center? And he's like, they're not hiring. And there's that big discussion where they're arguing over, like they're arguing over where he should work. And it's like the mines pay so much money and the Friendship Center does not pay like any money. But I think that's like one of the harsh realities, like within communities, is that, you know, industry pays so much money and it is like hella toxic, but it, and I've heard this argument before, like, you know, people have to feed their families, they have to survive, and these jobs allow for that survival, but at what cost, right? And I shouldn't shit on this, because literally though, I work in an industry where, yes, I get paid money. We have been librarians before. We get paid money, but our money comes from stolen knowledge from other people. And, you know, being able to capitalize and monetize off of stolen knowledge in the form of research and unethical research practices. Yeah. And universities have been horrible to Indigenous people and continue to a certain extent, but they pay my paycheck. So it's one of those things.
Yeah. Like a university as like a, like an extractive, like,
yeah,
industry, like extracting knowledge. Mm-hmm. Right. We don't think of it when we think of like taking resources as a university necessarily, but that's absolutely what's happening.
Yeah. It's just extractive industry in a different way and a different type of extraction. Right. But yeah, I actually, you know, I laughed, but then also felt super bad in that conversation. I'm like, oh, I've totally feel like I've heard this conversation before on like go working for the mines or like working in your community.
And, oh yeah.
You know, I was also with Mara where she was like just giving him shit and like yelling at him. I was like, yeah, go granny. Like, but also I was like, oh, this poor kid is just getting yelled at for wanting to make some cash. Like, mm-hmm. Yeah. And then everyone calling, everyone getting on him after.
Yeah, I think you're definitely onto something though, Sheila, about the connection with the church and the exploitation of industry. That's been happening since the beginning, you know, since 1492. And yeah, 1492, it's been a thing, right? And the missionaries, what they would do is they would actually, in their reports back to the king or wherever they're reporting back to, they would say, and they would show Indigenous folks as being, you know, barbaric or evil. And, but also at the same time, they would show them in ornate feathers or ornate like regalia. And that was to show that, yes, they have a lot of resources here, but also they're evil. So we don't have to have that, like, we don't have to feel guilty about exploiting them or the resources that, you know, they've had. Church and industry. There's a connection, absolutely, and there still is.
Yeah. And, but that also, like, the thing is, like, it's been such, like, the church's presence in our community has been such a long thing that it's also tradition as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, I grew up Catholic, like, and, like, that's, like, I have a lot to say about the Catholic Church. And like, especially when I was like really angry about everything. But now that I'm older, and like
older and wiser.
Yes. Yes. Like I can see like the role of that the church had when I was growing up. Like it taught me to care about community. Like it taught me like how to be a good like community member and like do things. Like there's other things that go along with the church, like potlucks and like hampers and blah 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 blah, and like doing like good things for people that you know through this community, and like others that you don't know through like just doing good things, and like how to just be like that person who's willing to give your time and energy to others. Like that was a huge lesson that I learned. And like, I take have taken with me everywhere. You know, like that's why I give a shit about other people, is because of what I learned at church, not necessarily the church teachings, but just like doing community things. So mm-hmm. like, it's hard, like it's very easy to criticize the church because they're so shitty at being good humans a lot of the time. But it's also like, well, but what did I get from that? You know, I got good things too. Like, mm-hmm.
And you got to look at, like, you know, it's hard to, it's also, you know, we don't want to shit on our community members and friends and family members that are also like highly religious and continue to practice, like, you know, churchy things, because, you know, that's their choice. And it's one of those big things. It's like, we got to decolonize our religion and stuff, but people want to believe in God. They want to believe in this. And it's not, I don't think it's for us to be like, you can't do that. I mean, I am not religious at all. I'm very unreligious in most ways. So yeah, even like talking about the creator, like it's not like a big thing for me and in my family. That's like not our religion. Like my dad was an atheist. My mom was United. So the fluffy Christian. They like the gays, so yeah. They appreciate the gays. So yeah, so it's like, and even like Eric and I are just not religious people. I feel more of like a connection to the land and stuff, but don't put like a big label or anything on it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Religion's a hard one. It's a hard one to talk about too. It's a fight causing thing and a thing that can bring us together. So
yeah,
it just depends on if you want to be hugging or scrapping.
Wow. Yeah. I don't think I'm as wise as the two of you are in this topic, but I have a completely different relationship with organized religion, you know? And like my family, my Métis side of the family, they're absolutely Roman Catholic. And I was supposed to be baptized actually in the Roman Catholic Church, but they wouldn't have me. They said no.
Really? Why?
Yeah. So I ended up getting baptized in the United Church, but it's because my dad was married previously. So they're we don't want that sin in here. So that was, you know, I think that was the beginning of my relationship with the church. I went to Catholic school growing up, actually, and I grew up in a religious community, and holy shit, people labeled me in school as the Antichrist. Oh. I was the Antichrist in school, and people, okay, get this. I had somebody tell me once that they had a vision from Jesus saying that I was bad news, like I was a bad person, and that they weren't going to hang out with me or be my friend anymore.
You know what? I've had this destroyed my friendships. I've had one of my own family members say that to me, but like, whatever. But okay, Tanya, I almost texted you last week because I was like, I just had this like memory of you, and we were driving out to Eric's mom's place, and we're driving through Abbotsford. We're going past Castle Fun Park, and Eric was just like, oh, the good old Bible Bells. And I was like, is it actually called that? Cause like, Tanya's called it that before. And he's like, oh yeah, the farther you go, the more religion it happens. And I was like, I was like, Tanya, like sitting in the car.
I feel her.
Driving past the like berries on the one side of the highway and the like Castle Fun Park on the other. I'm like, Tanya's manifesting around me. Like the echoes of the Bible Belt in my head. Like,
it's so true though. It is actually called the Bible Belt. And I remember going to university there and taking a world religions class, and all we learned about was Christianity, Judaism. And we learned about Islam for like 1 week, and all we learned about was terrorism. I'm like, what the fuck am I living in? Where am I? The Twilight Zone? So people often labeled me as a devil person or the Antichrist because I had very liberal point of views, right? So I would get into fights all the time in high school. It was nuts.
Antichrist? And I'm like a
big fighter, yeah.
As in like...
So now I'm like...
Antichrist? Yeah. Or like Antichrist?
Antichrist. Not like Christian. I'm like the devil. which nowadays I'm like, fuck yeah, I'm the devil. The devil's awesome. I'm reclaiming that.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. So religion, it's such a touchy subject for a lot of different people. Even I've been teaching, co-teaching a class with Paul Garrow in Native Studies about religion and relationality. And there were so many students that just got triggered in that class because of their relationship with, you know, organized religion. Some people actually dropped out. And I'm like, oh, it's gotten me a lot to think about in terms of like, how do you teach a subject like this?
Yeah.
Yeah. I took a couple of religious studies classes when I was in my undergrad because I really liked the professor. And I think too, like, he was very clear on the very first day that if you are coming into his classes with like a really theological mindset, you are not going to like it and you will be offended immediately, and would let people know that. And people, I saw a couple students walk out on the first day and drop the class because they were just like, but he gave that complete warning, like that this is not a theological study of religion. This is like, it will potentially offend you if you are religious and a high believer. I am not, so I thought it was hilarious. I love, you know, I thought it was hilarious. I got my shits and giggles those days, but like other people, yeah, it was really hard. It's almost like, you know, when we find it hard to learn about our community and other people's understandings of our communities, and then you're like that student that's just like, but that's not it. Like, that's not my community's understanding. That's not my family's understanding. And I can only imagine for people who are like highly religious that are sitting in these classes, they're like, well, that's not what I was taught. That's not what my family believes. And we practice it. And like, you're listening to a professor tell you just shit all over your family and your beliefs, like in an academic way. But yeah. I can see how that would be triggering. And I mean, I'm sure you read some interesting papers and had some interesting discussions with students, but I mean, that's got to be hard for you too, to have to read that and have students just totally cheesed at you as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, even that made me think about another high school moment. My science teacher, before he taught evolution, we basically had an entire class where he told the students, okay, you got to put your ideas aside here because I have to teach this as a part of the curriculum, because so many students in years past like turned that lecture into a huge argument. I've even had students like write in their papers that this happened because of religious reasons, or they would quote the Bible for as their sources and stuff, like in academics type papers. It was an interesting experience. I mean, I'm glad that I had it because it educated me quite a bit. And I actually love learning about religion. I love it. I like more like the witchy stuff, though. Witchy stuff, cult-like stuff, true crime stuff. I eat that stuff up. So I'm more about like the dark sides of religion, but
then there's also the dark side.
Go ahead. Yeah.
Oh, there's like the dark side of like organized religion, though, where if you read some of the stuff, like, I mean, not as popular, but like the Hypostasis of the Archons, which also is a great metal name, the Hypostasis of the Archons.
Tell it's me like, more.
You don't know. Okay. I'll no. say like, so it's like an older Bible text with Eve's daughter going to, yeah, it's just really sketchy. There's a lot of inappropriate things that happened to Eve's daughter in it. So I'll send you a thing, but yeah.
Yeah. Send us links. We're intrigued.
Learn more about
yes.
this.
but like, we don't have to go for like going back to the book. We don't have to go very far in our history as to like find when like religion has been evil to us. That's not just, and like, capturing us and taking us, and like, we know that very well. Like, it's almost like the big elephant in the room in the digital space, like in this conversation of like, yeah, like religion has been not good to us too, you know, with residential schools and stuff. Like, it's, you don't have to scratch very far to get to that place in our.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And that's why I don't teach residential schools. That's a boundary for me. If very strong one.
Yeah.
No, can't teach that. It's too close.
Yeah, I took a course on residential schools when I was in my like second year of Native Studies or something. And it was a hard course. And I like, it was taught by Norma Dunning. And I felt like she did the best job that she could to teach it. But there was a lot of Indigenous students in that class. I would say the majority of the students were actually Indigenous. So it was just like, it was hard, but it was a good class. Like, I mean, to learn the full history was like, really, like, I don't want to say interesting, but it was nice. It was interesting to learn like the full timeline and history of residential school and the thinking and like, yeah, but it was hard. It was really hard. I cried in that class. I got emotional.
I probably would have cried too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but it, you know, and Norma did a great job instructing it. So to the capacity that she did as an Inuit woman. So.
Can we go back to the Rougarou?
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. I love this Rougarou story. I love it. One thing that I'm wondering though, and this is not particular about this specific book, but about the Rougarou in general, why does the Rougarou protect women and not men and not children? You know, it seems to only, like it's, the story is used to incite fear to protect young women. But nobody else, it seems like.
Do you think it's has to do like as a in a patronizing way? Like,
I don't know.
Like, oh, women, you can't keep yourself safe.
They can't protect themselves from the wolf.
Yeah. But like, do you think that could be the case? Maybe?
I don't know, because like if that were the case, then it would include children.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And did any of the women turn into Rougarous in the story? Or was it just the men? Because I don't think Joan turned into one.
No. No, she did not.
And neither did Ajin.
No, but she is there at the very, very end for a dope Rougarou fight. Potentially. We were trying to figure out Sheila and I were talking about this. So we're trying to figure out, because there is a line where it's like with fur on her face. So we're not sure if she's talking about like herself or someone else that she's looking at that is a woman with fur on her face and she's ready for a fight. It's like in the last, like the very last page talks about it. So we're like, who has furry face? Like who has a furry face? And not like old lady fur, but an actual wild fur. Like,
yeah, maybe she was wearing like a Rougarou pelt or something. Like she's like the Buffy version of Rougarou killers, you know? Mm-hmm. Or maybe she shapeshifted into a different creature. Maybe she turned into a bear or something bigger.
Yeah, it's an open-ended ending. Like, I hope she writes another book.
I do too. I hope so, because I love this Rougarou book.
Yeah. Like this will become book one. Like
of the series.
Yeah. But I mean, that's okay if it doesn't. There's more to explore, as they say.
Yeah. I'm wondering if she's doing all of this like a Cherie Demelin to draw attention to the missing and murdered Indigenous women.
Yeah. You know?
Because the women didn't really turn into Rougarous overtly. And they're trying to protect women. Why do the women need to be protected? Because they're being taken.
Yeah.
They're being taken by charismatic white men.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And
that aren't afraid of doing stupid shit.
Thank you, Sonia.
Come on, Mr. Jimmy. What the fuck? Who was that guy? I hated him. They didn't really even talk about him a lot, but I hated him. just to refresh everyone's memories. So Jimmy was Zeus's dad. Now, Jimmy was seemingly living two lives here. He had a wife in Manitoba and he had a wife in Ontario, or like he was with Jimmy's mom in Ontario. Bea, I think her name was. Now, Bea had no idea that this other woman existed until she was pregnant with Zeus. because like the dad was this amazing powwow dancer and he wanted his child to be like his prodigy, and Zeus grew up not really wanting to dance. So then he went back and ditched them and went back to his first wife. Like, I imagine like in the trapper days, that was pretty easy because some men would just go off on the trap line, you know, and disappear for a few months, which made it easier. But
mm-hmm.
What an asshole, hey?
I hated him too. I was like, you fucking piece of shit. Like, you were so close, and like they were like 10 minutes away and then like came to see Zeus at the end of the day. I felt that kid's like, oh, I would, oh, I don't know if
he
I would
even cry. He was a rougarou, that Jimmy.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I do love Zeus though. He's such a great character.
Totally.
Like, what 12-year-old kid likes Johnny Cash? I'm like, seriously, like while reading this, I was like, but you know what? It's funny because like reading that and like reading about him, I was like, I feel like I'm reading about my grandpa, like my grandpa mm-hmm. Carl that passed away, because he also loved Johnny Cash and just like similar personality. So it was kind of funny. I'm like, this is like my grandpa when he was 12, probably. Like,
yeah. Music. There's always music in Métis stories.
Mm-hmm.
And Johnny Cash.
This one's Johnny Cash. Yeah. I read them, and some of the facts that Zeus would spew out, I'm like, I knew that. Yeah. Good job, me. Pat, pat, pat. Mm-hmm. Like when he was talking about the song Hurt. I don't know if you've ever heard that song. It's awesome. Johnny Cash does such a great job.
Yeah.
Yeah. The man in black. Johnny Cash.
Yep. Okay. Any more last thoughts on the book? I think we have time for maybe one more question / discussion.
I really enjoyed it. Yeah, to me, it blended like the modern, like the traditional storytelling as well. Like, it's a different fiction than other things that I've read. Like, it doesn't always have to be like a fictionalized take on like the real resistance or whatever. Like, it doesn't always have to be like that. It can just be, I thought it was a really smart way to like talk about like stories in our past as well as like stories in our present. And then, you know, with the extractive industries, honestly, stories that are going to affect us well into the future. So I thought it was a really smart book. I really, mm-hmm. but not too smart that I couldn't enjoy it with like my half brain, like that
squid brain.
Yeah, like my burnt out brain.
Yeah.
I love how she represented Métis families. I loved that. Like, this is something that is, I don't want to say it's uniquely Métis, but it's definitely something that you don't really see in mainstream society as much. And that's like Zeus, he had his own mom, of course, but he spent quite a bit of time with his auntie, you know? And I'm the same way. I'm really close with my auntie. It's like that village raising everyone up, that a child doesn't just have their mom and their dad to go to. It's intergenerational. And that's represented so many different times in this book. Even Joan, she had a really close relationship with her aunties, you know?
Yeah.
I enjoyed that. I was like, yeah, Métis families. And it's always, they're visiting in the kitchen, of course, because that's where families always visit. That's where the snacks are. So 100% recommend. I love this book. Love, love, love.
Yeah. I definitely think it's a good summer read too. Like, it's a good book for, you know, when you're by the lake, you're at the cabin, you're sitting on the beach, that kind of, you know, you're in the woods.
Not at night, though. Not at night.
No, not
at night. Don't want to summon the Blair Witch or anything.
No, maybe read it at night. Get yourself really spooked up and go snuggle right after.
Be scared of something that's not a virus.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it was I really enjoyed this book. I think other people will, too. Yeah. Who should read this book?
This is an everyone book for me.
Yeah.
This isn't everyone. Because, you know, sometimes I'm like, oh, this is an autobiography. This is a healing story. This is not for everyone. But this one here, I think everyone would enjoy it. Indigenous, non-Indigenous, everyone in between.
Yeah. Strong women, you will see yourself in this book. Be like, oh, my man, not perfect, but he's mine, god damn it. Like,
yeah, she's the heroine in the story. Mm-hmm. She saves everyone. Super feminist book.
Yeah. Strong female lead. Like, more please.
Yep. So before we sign off, I think we should talk a little bit about our last episode of this season.
Oh my god. Speaking of
strong live one.
Leads.
Yeah. I don't know. Who wants to talk about it?
You do, Tanya.
Me? I don't want to talk about it, man. So, okay.
You do, though.
Oh, yeah.
Well.
When is our recording? It's on June. See, this is why I shouldn't talk about it.
Okay.
Where is my head at? I had to pull up my calendar.
It's June 8th.
Okay.
And we will be recording a live podcast episode for Ilsa. And it looks in the planning that it will also be a video too. So you'll get to see our lovely mugs, which is not something normal because we have pajama party every weekend and we just show up all looking a hot mess rolled out of bed, but we will look our most deadliest antiness. And we will be doing a video recording with who wants to announce their guest.
Tennille Campbell. Woo! Bam, bam, bam. Tennille Campbell. Yeah. I'm so excited. Like, this is going to be fun. I've been reading her latest book of poetry and
it's saucy.
This is going to be a so fun time. Good. Yeah. So yes. Like, come hang out with us June 8th in the morning,
9 a.m. Mountain time.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. So yeah. And,
join us live. If you miss it, that's okay, because we'll throw it up on our YouTube. We have a YouTube channel as well.
Yeah. And we can also, I think we should put the audio.
Well, yeah, of course. Regular.
Yeah. But yeah, it's going to be like a live thing with video. So that's, it's going to be a sexy time.
Sexy morning time. Yes,
morning time. Yeah, so we're really excited. Thank you to Ilsa for making this happen, because Tennille Campbell has been
in our list forever.
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah. Someone we've wanted to talk to for a long time. So, yay, it's happening.
Yeah, I hope we become best friends after this.
Just saying out loud. I know, right? Like, so anyway, yeah, it's going to be great. So, yeah.
So huge, huge thanks to ILSA, Indigenous Literary Studies Association, ACUTE, Association of Canadian College and University Teachers of English, and to SHRC, Social Sciences and Humanities Research Council, for making this season possible and for letting us meet Tennille Campbell. Yay!
Yay! So, yeah, that's the next thing.
So. That's the next thing. Of course, if you have any questions for us or for Tennille, you can send them through social media or through our email, and we'll read it live.
Bookwomen on Twitter, @bookwomen, or bookwomenpodcast.ca, or bookwomenpodcast@gmail.com.
Do it up.
Slide into our DMs with some sexy questions. Not just you up.
Yeah.
Anyway, cool.
And with that, yeah, thanks everyone for joining us for this episode. And I mean, hi, and don't go out and get yourself ruby rude,
dumb bitch.